Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
First, we have to get through the 5 at 5, brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. Jeff, let's start with some NFL here. And give me the team, the biggest risers and the biggest fallers for this upcoming season. Now that we're done with the draft, we know schedules and all that good stuff.
Well, the biggest droppers are the New England Patriots.
Okay.
I think that's pretty easy. Brady's gone. They've had their run. Their time's over, man. Their time is over, Bramer. The biggest risers right now, I can't say the Baltimore Ravens because they did go 14-2 last year, but I love their draft. And again, at Kansas City, they won the Super Bowl. They can't be a biggest riser, right, because they added Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But some of the teams that I thought really helped themselves, I thought Cleveland helped themselves. And, Chris, I'm for whatever reason, I am bullish on the Chicago Bears this year. I like their first two picks, and I've just got a feeling that Foles might – bring a little bit of that magic there to Philadelphia to juice them up. And good gosh, will you stop me from also liking what Dallas did? Because I just
Dallas did well.
I know,
and they were good last year. They were way better than their record.
If their name wasn't the Dallas Cowboys, that'd be my pick to go to the Super Bowl out of the NFC. But I'm just not letting myself fall into that trap. I think they helped themselves a lot.
No, any other team would be an easy pick to make the playoffs. Dallas last year, the third best point differential in the NFC, and they were 1-6 in one score games, and they went 8-8. So under any other scenario, Dallas is an easy pick. Like, they are going to be better than they were last season. But yeah, but the trouble with them is they are the Dallas Cowboys, and they're always that team that everybody picks during the offseason, that they're going to be good, they're going to be back, and this and that. And it's like, you know, it's none of it's warranted. As we have mentioned here several times, the Falcons have been to now more Super Bowls than Dallas has won playoff games since Dallas last went to the Super Bowl. Or maybe it's the same number now. Has Dallas now won 2 playoff games since then? But it's close. Dallas hasn't won more. It's either the same or fewer.
Yeah, they won. I think they won one in 96. Like, did 96 or 90? Did Aikman win one last one against Carolina? And then they won the one against Detroit when Detroit got hosed. Is that it?
They in 96 they won one more, but and then they beat the Lions on that fraud.
Yeah,
in that fraud game. So it's 2. So the number's the same.
But Atlanta wound up going to the Super Bowl in 98. So, you know, since 1996, Atlanta has been to more Super Bowls and the Cowboys have playoff wins. That's one of those. If somebody would have told you that stat when you were 10 years old, any way you'd have ever believed that?
No. But there, you know, but there's that's the what Dallas is. That's the reality of Dallas now. And you know, but every year it's like they're the prized franchise. They've got the star on the side of their helmet, and this is finally going to be their time. And that's what gives me pause about them. But otherwise, like, everything about them last season, they shouldn't. I mean, last year they should have probably been like an 11 win team and made the playoffs and had a shot to get the Super Bowl, and they didn't get there. But you know, here they are. They went 8-8, fired their coach, had a really good draft. And had some bad luck in one score games.
Was there anybody else you were thinking of? Anybody else? I mean, I like Arizona too.
The Lions only won 3 games last year. Like, they're going to win more than that.
They should.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should. Houston had a terrible off season.
Yeah, they'd probably be my biggest faller. Even more so that, like, I really don't see the Patriots cratering this year.
If they do, it'll probably be by their own intentions.
Well, yeah, I mean, if they, right, if they're actually wise and at some point they get into the season. But, you know, New England does still play in the AFC East.
The thing with Houston is Bill O'Brien, who they hired, right, that's fine. You know, had a good resume. But when they give him the GM tag, too, and the DeAndre Hopkins trade, that's one. The biggest thing that would scare me about that is they finally got their great quarterback, right? And they went through years and years. They always had a good defense, but a strong running game. They just couldn't get that guy. So now they've got the quarterback. And I would be petrified that he would be thinking about leaving now.
Oh, I think he already is. Whenever his contract is up and he can sign a new deal, I would almost guarantee it will not be in Houston.
Unless they make a change at the front. Because Houston's a football-crazy town. It's a great city. There's no state taxes in Texas. I've got to think that would be a great place to play. But at the same time, he's got to be looking at that organization and thinking, well, they just traded. The other thing about Hopkins – he played with Watson at Clemson. Well, what are you doing?
Well, Florida has all those things, too, you mentioned.
They do.
And Peyton Manning wouldn't even go and visit in person.
He would not at Miami.
No, he ended up in cold Denver.
And I thought Miami made a lot of sense for him.
Well, yeah, I mean, all those things you mentioned about Texas. Location, the sun, the warm, the no state taxes. But that doesn't matter. At the end, these guys want to play for good franchises where they can win.
They do. All right, so you got – and I think Houston's going downhill – the Packers might be okay again this year, but they just had one of the world's worst drafts, as did the Patriots.
Yeah, the Packers were I didn't think they were great last year anyway, even at 13-3. They were a bit lucky, but depending on what Aaron Rodgers' mood is, I guess, they'll still be fine. They're not going to be horrible.
But they did the deal where they did not help themselves. To me, if you wanted to just look at this through the numbers and the regression to the mean, it wouldn't stun me if the Packers and Cowboys flip-flop records this year.
Yeah, where the Green Bay's 8-8 and Dallas is now 13-3. And that would be, you know, Mike McCarthy sticking it to him, too.
And you know, maybe not 13-3, but at least, you know,
11 or 12.
Yeah, I could see that. I also think the Browns helped themselves.
Well, yeah, for sure.
But I'm just
Cleveland just helped themselves by not being getting all the offseason attention, and they did get rid of Dog Pound Freddie Kitchens.
But I'm just sitting here, Chris, watching this Patriots Rams Super Bowl from January or February of 2002, and just all the drafts and schedules keep running on the NFL ticker up there. Just keep rolling through that Ravens draft. I'm like, all right, yeah, we all know it's a quote unquote inexact science. But I just look at the guys, I look at their schools, I look at their pedigree. That is a great team that really, really, really helped itself. And then I think, again, when you're thinking about Kansas City, you know, when's the last time the reigning Super Bowl champion got a guy who could be as big an impact player as Edwards-Helaire?
The funny thing, too, with Kansas City is the league set up its schedule that if they had to delay the start of the season or for some reason shorten the season, that every team that you play in week two, you share a bye week with.
Okay.
And there are no division games in weeks 3 and 4. And there are also no team plays either back-to-back on the road or back-to-back at home. So what the league would do is basically takes weeks 1 and 2 and move them to the end of the season as where, you know, weeks 18 and 19, and possibly eliminate weeks 3 and 4.
Okay.
And if weeks 3 and 4 got eliminated, Kansas City then, the reigning Super Bowl champs, would not have to go to Baltimore, would not have to host New England.
So can you say, they'd play 14? So can you say 14-0?
Yeah. I mean, they would catch a huge break not having to play weeks 3 and 4 if it did end up coming to that. Houston, actually, too, wouldn't be in such bad shape. They're at Pittsburgh and host Minnesota. In fact, talking about the Texans maybe slip-sliding away this season, that's their first four games are at Kansas City. And you know, that could actually be a break for them because they're opening up against the defending champs.
Sure,
and
sure.
The Kansas City's going to have a huge celebration. They could actually catch the Chiefs in a good spot there. But then They come home to host Baltimore, then go to Pittsburgh, and then host Minnesota. So
that's whew.
Yeah. And you got
that's brutal.
You got four good teams right there in a row where you could easily see Houston just jumping out at 0-4.
Yeah, that's one. If you're a diehard Texans fan, if somebody offered you 2-2, I mean, you'd jump at that right now.
Yeah. No, but then again, but you know, they could end up without the Pittsburgh and Minnesota games if somehow they, you know, weeks 3 and 4, if it came to that, where those 2 weeks ended up getting scrapped.
But it should be a tremendous race in the NFC because there is no clear-cut favorite. I mean, San Francisco, they had the best team last year. I think Seattle probably had the second-best team in the NFC. You know, they Green Bay edged them, but San Fran, obviously, what happened? You talk about a game of inches. That was the best illustration ever in the last game of the regular season. But, you know, you always wonder about the Super Bowl hangover, especially because San Fran lost a heartbreaker. You know, how can you pick New Orleans or Green Bay? They've got all-time great quarterbacks, but neither one's been to the Super Bowl in a decade. Are you going to book on Kirk Cousins? You going to book the Cowboys? That's why, to me, I like Philadelphia because I feel like the Eagles are solid. Peterson's a good coach. And even last year with that rash of injuries, and I get that division wasn't very good, they still at least made the playoffs. So I just look at Philly, and I think they're the safest bet out of the NFC. But that conference is absolutely wide open.
Well, Dallas would be my pick, but they're not. They're not coming in under the radar.
No, no.
And so, also, which makes the Eagles the attractive team there for those reasons you said. They won the division last year. They've got a really good coach. He goes for two when they score to go up 7.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Carson Wentz has gotten to a stage in his career, though, where it's debatable what direction his career is going to go. And is he going to be that franchise guy that they can trust for a long time? Or within the next year or two, do they have to start maybe thinking about moving past him? Maybe that could be a spot Aaron Rodgers ends up for his final act.
That's a good call. If Wentz is, just for whatever reason, if he just can't stay healthy. And listen, that happens to some guys, and he's a great player. And we watched him in a couple of those Division II championship games or 1AA championship games at North Dakota State. And, you know, is he going to be number one? Is he going to be number two? But he's a big guy who can throw it. And, you know, as you pointed out, Chris, when they won the Super Bowl in the 2017 season, I mean, he was going to be the MVP before he got hurt. So now it's a question. I think one of these things with Wentz, too, as we talked about, I felt they probably brought him back a little bit too quickly in 18. And, you know, you think back to the incredible recovery that Adrian Peterson had, and I think now everybody, oh, it's just a 6, 7, 8 month injury. When, you know, that thing used to be a year and a half, and not everyone's built and equipped to just jump back in there. I mean, you can remember 20, 25 years ago, if a player tore an ACL, you came back that next year and you were a shell of what you were. And then maybe that next season, you started to get it back.
Science. All right, moving on in the 5 at 5. All right, it's time for our favorite segment, Fantasy Football Talk with a guy who doesn't play fantasy football. Give me the most impactful rookie this year in fantasy. Who will it be? All these skill guys that got taken.
I'm hoping for you. It's Tua Tagovailoa. I think Burrow might have a tough first year. I think he's going to have a terrific career, but that first year could be a tough one. So I'm going to give you a couple from later in the draft,
all right,
my friend. C.D. Lamb,
yeah,
and Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Yeah, I think Edwards-Helaire is a good, the best call there.
And I'm just thinking, too, if I'm Lamb, I'm going in there thinking, all right, Prescott's a really good quarterback. Elliott's one of the best backs in the league. And Amari Cooper's getting double-teamed every play.
Well, they've also got another guy who had a good year last year, because I did have him as a member of the Hod Richards, Michael Gallup.
Yep.
So there's a lot of guys to spread the ball around to there. In fact, it's from a fantasy football standpoint, one guy who's probably hurt a lot by what his team did during the offseason is actually Amari Cooper.
Right,
because they already had Gallup, and now they've added CeeDee Lamb. But on the other side of that, And a player who's already been active in the league that will benefit the most from either landing in a new spot or will just benefit from being in the same spot, but by what they did, his team did in the offseason.
All right, let's go Kyler Murray and Mike Evans.
Yeah. Well, maybe Brady will be a fantasy impact fantasy player again now that he's got all those weapons to throw to. And he's getting Gronk back.
They got some dudes. And, you know, you've got to think, too, and again, we're talking about what was the greatest or most successful marriage of a quarterback and coach in history, even more so than Landry Staubach, Walsh in Montana, Noel and Bradshaw, you name it. But, my gosh, Bruce Arians is just obviously – knowing neither Bruce Arians nor Bill Belichick. I know Bring hangs out and has coffee with both of them. My God, that's got to be a breath of fresh air for him.
Yeah, well, I think Arians does. He lives down on Lake Oconee, right?
Yeah, see, yeah, he does. I know he plays in that Chick-fil-A golf tournament.
Yeah. No, he's got I remember when the Cardinals were on one of those shows where they film an entire season.
Yeah.
During the bye week, He was down on Lake Oconee.
But I know Drew Butler when he was punting for the Cardinals, and unfortunately Drew's career got cut short because of injury. But Drew absolutely loved Arians, and I just, you know, I think this might be one of those where at the end, obviously Arians, who was, you know, probably a guy who never thought he'd get that shot. You know, he was a longtime assistant, a terrific assistant, and he finally got the call and was highly successful. So, you know, kind of for him, this is, you know, his last rodeo, and now to have Tom Brady come down there for his last year or two, I think you might see good things out of Tampa this year. And listen, seven teams making the playoffs on each side, I think they're a really good bet to make the playoffs.
I think that answers the question. Arians answers the question as to how does Tom Brady end up on arguably the worst franchise in NFL history.
I agree. It's
after
Arians.
Yeah, after basically being responsible for turning New England into, you know, maybe you have to call them now, it's the best franchise ever. What they've done for 20 years and what they've accomplished, and so he goes from the best to the worst. But Bruce Arians is, I think, how that happens. For
and
sure,
there is no doubt they are. If you're talking about all sports in North America, they are the pro sports team of the 21st century, the Patriots. There's nobody that can even argue with it.
No, it's a 20-year run that did include a 10-year gap in Super Bowls, but even during that gap, I think their worst record was like maybe 11-5.
They just couldn't beat the Giants those 2 years.
Yeah. All right, moving on in the 5-5, we'll talk a little college football now. Give me a team in each league that the big boys in those leagues don't want to have to face during the season.
And obviously, this is if we're talking about Alabama, we're not going to say Auburn. So we're going to come in a little bit under the radar.
Yeah, you know, one of those, like just a little pesky little team on the, you know, they might end up like, you know, five, might even end up a bowl team. Might end up 5-7, 6-6, something like that. But
all right, I got you. SEC, Mississippi State.
Yeah, with Mike Leach. Just begin that offense too. It's, you know, all of a sudden you play Mississippi State in 1 week. You've just got to design a defense that's prepared to do nothing but defend passing attempts.
And their defense probably won't be as good as it has been just because of the nature of the offense. But, boy, you also feel the pressure then that you got to score every time.
Yeah, when you've got the ball. Yeah, one little turnover, and if you give them another crack at it.
That's tough. Big Ten, Chris? Illinois.
Yeah, I think it's the other team with an eye. It's Indiana.
Okay.
Indiana was pretty good last year. They were darn close to winning 9 games, got beaten in the Gator Bowl by Tennessee, but they've got like everything coming back, and they catch Penn State at home this season. I believe they get the Buckeyes at home this year too.
And Indiana, they've been a thorn in Ohio State, so they don't beat them, but they've played them some close games. Big 12, my friend, I'm a little bit torn here, but between Kansas State and TCU.
Yeah, I'd take TCU there. TCU should be back to having a good defense again. They were solid a year ago, too, and they are pretty firm there and getting a lot back.
All right. In the Pac-12.
The Kansas State last year showed. I mean, that coach, they get him from North Dakota State. Good. Like he just wins.
He's good. And they smoked Oklahoma. I know Oklahoma came back and made it close, but they dominated that game. Pac-12, you and I are both on Arizona State's bandwagon. Oh, gosh, now the ACC. Well, I mean, everybody outside of you-know-whos and also ran there. So a lot of people on the heels bandwagon. So I will take Virginia Tech. If you don't let me take Virginia Tech, I'll take a program that's won 5 national titles but lost to the other Tech last year. Give me Miami with Derek King.
Yeah. Yeah, they lost to that other Tech, though. You're right.
That was a bad loss. That was a beautiful pass that hefty punter who's a stud threw for Tech.
You know what? There were also a couple of in that game. Well, including that one, I guess. The
special teams disaster.
A few STDs for Miami in that game.
Got to stay away from those.
Yeah. Miami with Derek King now trying to liven up that offense.
But, yeah, you just kind of look through the rest of the league. And I know Miami's had an incredible history these last 40 years. And, you know, Virginia Tech, very good. Going back to even Bill Dooley and then Frank Beamer. But, you know, it's hard to even look. And Mack Brown's rebuilding North Carolina. But it's hard to look through. And, yeah, David Cutcliffe's a really good coach. And, you know, to look at somebody down on the bottom there, like, you know, is Boston College really going to jump up there and beat somebody? Well, I mean, maybe if Clemson has to go up there in November and there's a snowstorm, it'll be closed.
But what about Syracuse again?
I think Syracuse, they got their win and had their crack at them. I'd have a hard time seeing Clemson coming in sleepy for them again.
Well, they didn't last year.
No.
I don't even know. I guess, they're in the same division, so Clemson does have to play them every year. Now, Clemson doesn't have a game. They can nap until November 7th when they play Notre Dame.
And that's the thing, too. Like we said, potentially Miami with King. And the thing about Miami, they're always going to have players just because of their recruiting base. Virginia Tech, I think, will be good. They got a lot back. North Carolina is going to be good. They're recruiting well. They got a lot back, including an excellent quarterback. But they're all on the other side. So now you look in their division. I mean, realistically, the team that would have the best chance to beat them would be Florida State because their roster of the teams that Clemson plays on their side of the ACC, that's the only one that could even come close to comparing to a first 22.
They haven't signed a quarterback in a couple of years, I guess.
Exactly.
But here's the currently available Clemson numbers. All right, they're laying 26 at Tech in week one. They're minus 23.5 at home against Louisville in week two. There is no line on the Akron game.
Why? Clemson went 14-1 and Akron went 0-12. And what was Akron's record against the number?
They were 1-11.
But they had a 10-game losing streak, right?
Yeah. Clemson then is minus 27.5 at home against Virginia.
Wow.
Minus 37.5 at home against Syracuse.
Oh, my God.
The 7.5-point favorite is all on the road at Notre Dame. That's lower than I thought it would be. So those are the Clemson spreads out there right now. So the lowest number at this point is 23.5 against Louisville. 7.5 against Notre Dame, but then no other one. The lowest one is 23.5. So, like I said, Clemson can take a nap until November 7th.
By the way, I also think South Carolina is going to be good this coming year.
South Carolina?
Yep. But their schedule is just brutal.
Yeah, I mean, they'll be good like they were last year where they were capable of beating Georgia, but they're not going to go to a bowl game.
They'd have to pull off a couple.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll miss a bowl game. Kentucky's the team in the SEC East that I would kind of worry me, and especially because of where Georgia plays them.
Got those tweener games. And especially, it could be chilly up there that Saturday.
Yeah. But it, you know, comes between, you know, right before Tech and then right after that little run where Georgia's got Florida, South Carolina, and Tennessee.
Yep.
And you got to go up to Lexington.
KY. Although and we look, too, that because of the what they've done in the SEC West, that baby's either going to be a nooner or at night.
Well, the good part then is that that weekend the Kentucky basketball team could be playing like Duke or somebody. So they could be have their focus taken there. I did see that Kentucky and Michigan were supposed to play in London this season, but they've pushed it back a year now.
Wait, Kentucky and Michigan were supposed to play basketball in London?
Yes, they were supposed to play basketball this season in London, but they've postponed that by 1 year.
How about that?
Yeah. Well, you know, hey, instead of playing them in Rupp Arena or whatever the name of the arena where Michigan plays basketball, why not play in London?
That's Chrysler Arena, I believe.
That's where Michigan plays?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, there's the 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.